WRLR 98.3 FM LP, Round Lake Beach, Illinois.
And she loves me. We're as happy as two can be. We have our quarrel.
My name is Jim Wunderlich. This is Word of Mouth. And my guest today is Todd Hunt, a nostalgic humorist. And Todd is also a Lucille Ball historian with countless anecdotes about the iconic I Love Lucy show. He's also spent years researching Desi Arnaz. Todd Hunt is here today to discuss Desi, Lucy, and the I Love Lucy show. And Todd, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you, Jim. It's nice to chat with another Desi aficionado. I think everybody loves Lucy, of course, but I have the feeling that you and I may love Desi even more.
Yeah, and we're going to dive into that. First of all, though, we should probably get your backstory. You had a successful career, I should say, as an advertising executive with Ogilvy & Mather. What were you doing there?
Well, I asked myself that question many times. I was an ad executive. Think Don Draper on Mad Men Darren Stevens on Bewitched. I was the liaison between the clients and the creative people. And that's where I really got into the creative aspect of things, as well as the business side of things.
We both grew up watching I Love Lucy, probably mostly the reruns. And that's a story in itself, which we're going to get to. The fact that there were reruns, one of the first shows to have reruns.
Yes.
What triggered your interest as a youngster in I Love Lucy?
She was funny, of course, and she influenced me in many ways. In fact, when I was in fourth grade, I made a movie about two bakers who got into a pie fight. And we had whipped cream pies, and I did a rehearsal before we shot it without the whipped cream, just those plates. And because it was silent, I could give direction. I say, okay, Bob, now I'm going to do this. You're going to turn, then I'm going to hit you in the face with this, and then you're going to do this, and then I'm going to do that. Then we got wound up, and my dad got the 8mm Brownie home movie camera going. And when Bob did the first pie in the face to me, he doubled over in laughter because we had never done it with the actual whipped cream before. And I kept saying, okay, now don't forget to do this. So I'm directing as I'm getting pie in the face.
So you're kind of reenacting some of the episodes of Lucy because there obviously was a lot of slapstick and pratfalls and that type of
thing. Absolutely.
Any episode that triggered your interest even more? So
I think everybody's familiar and loves the Chocolate Factory the Stomping the Grapes. Yeah. My favorite one actually was, the episode was titled Lucy Does the Tango, which I refer to as the Eggs episode. This is the final season where they had moved to the country, and they had a hen house, Ethel and Lucy. But the hens were not laying eggs, and Ricky was upset with Fred, so Lucy and Ethel concocted a scheme to buy 4 dozen eggs from the store, and they were going to put them in the hen house to give the hens the idea. But lo and behold, Desi comes home unexpectedly and wants to rehearse a tango number. Now, by this time, Lucy and Ethel have stuffed the eggs in their clothes, in their shorts, in their jackets, and they're about to go to the hen house to deposit the eggs. Desi comes home, makes her do the tango. Now, they had previously shown a rehearsal of it, so we knew what was happening. And at the end, he embraces Lucy, and all the eggs break in her clothing. And it was the longest laugh ever recorded on I Love Lucy. It was 65 seconds of uninterrupted laughter. In fact, they had to cut it down because it was running too long. And I found out later that, like me and Bob and our pie fight, they had never rehearsed it with real eggs because Lucy wanted the reaction to be spontaneous.
And she just milks it. She just milks it. Yeah. Her takes and everything.
The laughs start to die down, and then she does a little movement with her face or with her hand. The laughs come up again, and then they go down, and then they come up again. And Desi is looking on in horror and holding just the right amount of time before he finally says, Lucy, I know this is a ridiculous question, but what were you doing with eggs under your shirt? Lucy holds just the right amount of time and says, trying to hatch them? The timing couldn't have been more perfect on both of their parts.
Speaking of Desi, let's back up a bit and start with Desi Arnaz, because his story is remarkable. way before Hollywood. He was of Cuban descent, lived in Cuba, Santiago. What stands out to you the most about his early life in Cuba and then his journey to the United States?
Yes, he was born in 1917. Family was very well off. His father was the mayor of Santiago and served in the Cuban House of Representatives. His mother was heir to the Bacardi rum fortune. And they had a big farm and animals and everything, but they lost it, everything, in the Cuban Revolution of 1933. Desi and his father fled to Miami. He knew almost no English. They lived in a garage infested with rats and roaches, and he just pulled himself up by the bootstraps, and he started getting odd jobs, playing conga drum, and then the band leader Xavier Cugat spotted him and hired him to play drums and sing in his orchestra. That led to Desi starting his own orchestra, and it went on from there.
Just looking back at Miami, I think there's a story where he and his dad found some broken tiles. Do you want to tell that?
Sure.
Yeah. It shows how desperate they were. First got over here for money.
They couldn't sell the broken tiles because who would buy tiles that are broken?
So, exactly.
So they came up with an idea to make these tiles into sculptures and use them for fireplaces as these broken pieces, and it was this shishy thing to do, and it caught on, and people bought the tiles, and it was so popular that at one point his father had to buy some more regular tiles and then break them so they could continue their broken tile business.
The amazing thing, they knew nothing about tiles.
And no.
Hey, we'll learn it.
Exactly.
And a lot of chutzpah with those, with both he and his dad. His dad was a great mentor throughout his entire life. So he got his start with Xavier Cugat, and we're going to leave off with Desi there. Let's move on to Lucille Ball, get to her early life. Like Desi, she had to overcome a lot of numerous obstacles. What was her path like before I Love Lucy?
Well, she was born in 1911, which made her 6 years older than Desi. Her father died when she was only 3 years old, and she was shuttled back and forth between step-parents and aunts and uncles. At one point, she decided to go to New York to study acting. And this is 1926. She's 15 years old. And the teachers wrote a letter to her mother and said, "Bring Lucille home. You're wasting your money. She has no talent. She's not going to make it in this business." Boy, were they wrong.
No kidding.
She went back home to Jamestown, New York, where she was from, and then a couple years later went back to New York, found work as a model because she had the looks and the legs.
She's a beautiful woman.
Oh, she's...
We forget because of all the slapstick she was doing, but she was really gorgeous.
She learned deportment at Hattie Carnegie Modeling Agency, and she actually became the model for Chesterfield cigarettes. She was on the posters smoking the cigarette. By chance, there was an opening for one showgirl in a Sam Goldwyn movie in Hollywood, and she went and applied for it. 2 days later, got on the train, went to Hollywood. Fast forward, she was in movies for 20 years before I Love Lucy even came about. Small parts. She was queen of the B movies, but not a star. And then came along My Favorite Husband, which was a radio show in 1948 to 51. And she played sort of a version of Lucy Ricardo. Her name was Liz Cooper. And she got into funny scrapes. And her tagline at the end of each episode was, "Thanks, George. You're my favorite husband." Da, 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 da.
Is that where she kind of found her comic voice?
Yes.
That radio radio show.
And she found the voice from the writers. A couple of kids, she called them, Bob Carroll Jr. and Madeline Pugh, who were early 20s.
And those names are familiar.
Yes. Yeah. And they scripted My Favorite Husband. At the same time, she was also a contract player with RKO Radio Pictures. And one of her first movies was with the Three Stooges.
I did not know that.
She had a small part. There's a scene where she says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm going to college." And he says, "What are you studying in college?" And he said, "Pig Latin. Atwe arye uye uingde udaite." And he said, "You probably don't know what that means." And she says, "Oh, oh, nay." It's not a big part, but that was her claim to fame, Three Stooges.
We should probably talk about one of the great Hollywood partnerships, Lucy and Desi, and the big question, how did Lucy and Desi finally meet? I know it was in L.A. or Hollywood. How did that all come about?
Well, we'll go back to Desi briefly. Rodgers and Hart saw him in a nightclub, and they cast him in a musical of theirs called Too Many Girls. And believe it or not, there was a part for a young Latin football player. It was a dumb plot, but it was a big hit, and RKO bought the movie rights. And they brought Desi to Hollywood to appear in the movie version. And coincidentally, Lucille was also in the movie. They weren't playing opposite each other, but that's how they got to know each other. Instantly attracted. They eloped 6 months later.
Oh, my. You know, you kind of wonder what made their chemistry so unique. I mean, he was still learning English.
Yes.
And he was from Cuba. She was from New York.
What's even more interesting is they both had fiery tempers.
Right.
And they argued all the time, and just as quickly they would make up. He was taken by her because of her looks. She was taken by him because of his looks and his Latin charm. And they just really connected.
So there was a radio show that you talked about, My Favorite Husband. And CBS, if I understand, wanted to make that into a TV show. This is where the plot kind of thickens.
Exactly.
And what happens now?
As you said, they wanted to make it into a TV show, and Lucy said no. By the way, we should clarify, Desi was not on that radio show.
No.
Richard Crenna played her husband. So CBS said, we want to turn it into a TV show, and Lucy said no, unless her real-life husband, Desi, could play her on-screen husband. And CBS said, yeah, right, that's not going to happen. Nobody will understand what he says, that accent. Besides, who would believe an American woman is married to a Cuban? And she said, but I am married to a Cuban in real life, and I have been for 10 years. But CBS said, America is not ready for that. We cannot put a mixed marriage on television.
Mm. So there was a lot of pushback. Hard to believe now that would be such a big mm-hmm. deal. How did they win them over? What were they able to do? I mean, because obviously they were able to do something because
yes.
the show finally came
about. They were very smart. So all during this time, Desi had his orchestra and he had been doing concerts. So they decided to put together a 20-minute comedy act. And they got the writers from My Favorite Husband to put this comedy act together. And they toured it with Desi's orchestra for about 3 months in the summer. In the middle of the orchestra show, they had this little skit just to see if audiences would go for it and would believe it. And they were a huge hit.
What kind of skit might they do?
It actually showed up in later the Lucy pilot and one of the episodes. Mm. She's the professor where she comes up on stage and interrupts the orchestra. I'm looking for Ricky Ricardo. Where's Ricky Ricardo? And she pulls out a cello and she plays the horns as a seal and she's flapping around
audience
just loved it. And CBS said, okay, you convinced us, we'll try it. Well, it went on to run for 180 episodes.
Unbelievable. Now, they had to get a sponsor.
They did. They went, and in those days, one company sponsored the entire program.
Right.
There
right.
weren't several different commercials. There
right,
was
right.
there was one commercial break in the middle, one commercial at the beginning, and one commercial at the end, and the sponsor was Philip Morris Cigarettes. And like many of the stars at that time, Lucy and Desi did some of the commercials themselves as Lucy and Ricky, including at the end of the show.
We actually happen to have an example.
Ooh.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
Oh, how about a good night cigarette, Ricky?
Thank you, Lucy. Nothing but the best, huh?
Match. Nothing but Philip Morris.
Sure tastes good. And you know something, Lucy?
Hmm.
When you find a good friend, well, you kind of like to pass it along to your friends.
That means you. Have you tried a Philip Morris lately?
You'll love them. They're so smooth and mild, and they taste so good.
And most important, there's no cigarette hangover when you smoke Philip Morris.
That's right. That's what we say. You'll be glad tomorrow.
You smoke Philip Morris today.
Good night.
Call for Philip Morris.
No cigarette hangover. Don't you love that?
I did hear that.
I have no idea what a cigarette hangover is, but you didn't get one with Philip Morris cigarettes.
It's amazing, isn't it? The cigarette companies were so huge. I understand that they weren't even allowed to say the word lucky in the program because
yes.
of Lucky Strike.
And kids were watching this. Now, here's a funny thing. I mentioned earlier Lucy was the model for Chesterfield cigarettes. And she was hooked on Chesterfields. Mm. She would take a package of Philip Morris cigarettes, dump out the cigarettes, fill it with Chesterfield. In those days, the sponsors were hanging around all the time and at rehearsals and stuff. And heaven forbid, they would see her pick up a package of Chesterfield. So she'd pick up the package of Philip Morris, pull out a cigarette, and start smoking. But it was really a Chesterfield cigarette, and nobody ever knew.
We both liked Desi. And folks now might not realize he was the brains behind the whole operation of I Love Lucy. Granted, Lucy was the key, and she was the star. In fact, she even wore pearls and when she was getting all messed up and everything. So, you know, we knew she was the star.
Yep.
But Desi, my goodness, definitely revolutionary in terms of coming up with so many ideas. And let's kind of start there. Okay, they have this I Love Lucy show, and Desi thinks, well, Lucy works best when she's in front of a live audience, and maybe you want to take it from there.
They got signed up to do the show, and then CBS said, now, when are you going to move to New York to start the show? And they said, what? Move to New York? No, we live in California. We don't want to go to New York. In those days, the shows were all done live, and kinescopes were made, which is an early format where a camera was set up in front of a little TV set, and literally a movie would be made of the live show as it was going out on the air.
I got to say something about that word. That's a fancy word for this is a bad resolution, bad TV,
yes.
Fuzzy TV. Whoever came up with that word, what a euphemism. Bad TV.
Yeah, if you see some old other shows like Sid Caesar's show mm-hmm. shows, even Honeymooners, they're grainy, they're
exactly.
bad quality. But they did that because the West Coast was a three-hour time difference from New York, so they would then show those kinescopes on the West Coast. Lucy and Desi hated that quality, so they decided to shoot the show in Hollywood like a movie on 35-millimeter film.
Amazing.
Which was very expensive. And CBS had a fit. And Lucy and Desi, so smart, both of them, said, okay, we'll make a deal.
Mostly Desi.
Mostly Desi. Like,
yeah.
Lucy was a great actress, and she spent all her time practicing and rehearsing. But Desi was the brains.
Because she'd say, you handle the issues.
You handle the issues.
Right, right.
Desi says, we'll make you a deal. We'll take a lower salary. And they, at that time, they were making... two of them together, making $5,000 per episode. We'll take $4,000 per episode. And in exchange, we will own the negatives and the rights. CBS said, fine with us. We're never going to show them again. Jim, imagine, who would ever watch a TV show again?
Particularly a comedy where you know all the where the laughs are coming.
After it's already been on. That's crazy. Well, they, wow. in so doing... got pristine quality for the entire country. Reruns were born. And to your point about innovations, how do you shoot a live show with movie cameras in front of an audience? Mm-hmm. Well, you get a studio and you add bleachers for 300 people. You have all sorts of fire code things and exits and bathrooms for the patrons. In fact, in the studio that they used, there was only one bathroom. So... Lucy let the ladies use the bathroom in her dressing room.
Right, right, right.
So they would troop over and walk through the stuff.
She was fine with it.
She was fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing about doing it on film, they did these as plays from beginning to end. There were very few stops.
It was a stage play.
It was a stage play.
Right, right.
And even the costume changes were in real time, sort of like Saturday Night Live is now.
Sure.
They would have costume people in the back ready to peel off Lucy's dress and put on the nightgown and do whatever. By doing that, they were able to then edit the film together. And another concept. A lot of people say, well, Desi invented the concept of shooting with three cameras. He didn't really invent it, but he perfected it. And that was one camera in the center, one on the left, one on the right, all running at the same time, capturing different perspectives,
wow.
a close-up, a wide shot, etc., which were then cut and edited together in the editing room to be broadcast later, just like a movie.
So laborious.
Oh,
yeah. Hours and hours of cutting film. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine?
There were no computers. There was no digital.
Oh,
the editors would sit behind these little editors called the moviolas and say, okay, here we're going to cut from this camera to this camera. And they would cut the film apart. They would splice it together, sync up the audio with it. It took them 2 weeks just to edit an episode.
And probably in those days, when you were splicing, you're probably using magnetic tape or something, I would think. I'm not sure, but...
It was actual celluloid film with film cement.
Cement, yeah. Okay, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. Talk about laborious, though. He'd be in the editing room all the time, too.
He would be checking on, and we mentioned earlier, sometimes the laughs would run long, and they'd have to cut down, because remember, they had to fit all of this within 26 minutes.
Right.
Plus 4 minutes for the commercials. Nowadays, you're lucky if you get 20 minutes of show and 10 minutes of commercial. But he would look over the shoulder of Danny Kahn, their editor, and say, now, Danny, don't mess up Lucy's business. You got to be judicious in where you cut the laughs down so it doesn't look like it's been cut down.
He had to hire a director of photography, and this was key because now they would have three or four different sets. You know, maybe they have the kitchen or the bedroom, whatever. But lighting's a problem with that, too. And you want to talk about the guy that they hired?
Yeah.
They got an amazing guy.
They got an amazing fellow by the name of Carl Freund, who had done a lot of the 1930s monster movies, the black and white things. So he was an expert. He was pretty much retired by then. They called him Papa. He was a big guy, Papa Freund. And they explained what we're going to do, and we're going to have three sets, one next to each other, and we're going to have this audience. We're going to shoot it in real time. And Carl says, can't be done. Why not? Because you need different lighting for a close-up, for a wide shot. You have to stop and change. They said, we can't stop. We got to shoot it all the way. You can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do it. Well, you know, Papa, if anybody can do it, you can. And they sweet-talked him. And he figured out a way to have very flat, even lighting that would work no matter where the cameras were located. And there was a lot of testing. And he came up with that. And that was another unsung thing of Desi. Desi said, we have to do it this way. Figure it out.
And he was big with dollies. There was a lot of movement with the cameras. You don't notice it, I guess, unless you're really paying attention.
Yes. And I mentioned that Desi didn't invent three cameras. There had been some three cameras before, but they were in fixed position.
Exactly.
But as you say, they moved.
Right.
So sometimes they would move and they would zoom in and they would move on. And the floor had to be immaculately clean and polished, and even they had to put in brand new floor because the studio used to be a movie studio and the floor had gouges and stuff from cameras and things that had to be totally smooth.
You know, it was interesting that Desi was so involved with what you said, even props, scripts, everything, but the floor was important, and he made sure he hired a janitor that would make sure it was spotless.
Yeah.
And that guy stayed with him for years. I mean, he was doing everything. You know, he said he could phone in the character because he'd be on the phone maybe, you know, working out this problem or that problem off stage, and he'd run in and then do his bit and then go back. He had a photographic memory, by the way, being able to just do the dialogue that he did.
Yes.
He really needed no rehearsal.
And in that way, you know who else had a photographic memory? It was Jackie Gleason.
Oh, right.
He could
right.
look at a script once and know it.
Right, right.
So Desi would be, on, as you say, on the phone dealing with other things. And that Desi, you're needed on the set. He'd come down, he'd do his scene. You mentioned props. I got a funny story about that. Do you remember the episode was titled Pioneer Women, where Lucy and Ethel have to pretend like they're pioneers and do everything themselves, including baking bread. And Lucy makes this loaf of bread that comes out of the oven. And it's like 12 feet long, and it pins her against the wall. This was particularly Lucy, but Desi, too, did not want a papier-mâché huge loaf of bread. They wanted real bread. So they scoured around these bakeries in Los Angeles and finally found a bakery that could make a pan big enough to bake a real loaf of bread, like 12 feet long by 3 feet by 3 feet. And at the end of the episode, when they were done filming, they cut it into slabs, and the audience got to eat bread. They set up tables, and they had bread and jam and honey, and it was authentic.
One thing I'd like to get into before the break, he was involved with the casting, too. And William Frawley, we have to mention him, of course, and Vivian Vance.
Yep.
Those two roles were key, and we're talking about Fred and Ethel. You want to talk about Fred first?
Sure.
Okay.
William Frawley was not the first choice. The first choice was Gail Gordon, who your listeners may remember showed up in the later Lucy shows as Mr. Mooney and Harrison
Mr.
Carter.
Mooney, yeah.
He had actually done some work on My Favorite Husband, but he was committed to do our Miss Brooks TV show and radio show, and he couldn't do it. So William Frawley heard about the new show, and he called Lucy and asked her for the part of Fred. And Lucy and Desi agreed that a movie veteran in the cast, and by the way, he had made more than 100 movies already, always small parts, but he was very recognizable. CBS was not keen on that idea because Frawley was known for his drinking and his instability. Desi had a heart-to-heart with him, and he said, if you show up drunk even once, or don't know your lines, or you can't perform more than once, we will write you off the show. That sobered him up, so to speak. He never showed up drunk, and he always knew his lines.
And he was amazing.
He was amazing. In fact, he didn't like to work all that much. He would go to the Monday morning read-through. He would tear out the pages of the script that had him on it, and he would go home and he would learn those parts. So he never knew what else was going on in the episode. He'd have a line that say, hi, Ethel, that was a laugh line, and he said, I don't see what's so funny about that. And Desi said, well, you have to understand the setup is thus and so and so and so. And then you come in and say, oh, well, that's funny. Came in, he did his scenes, and then he was gone.
And Vivian Vance and him, I'm saying Ethel and Fred, obviously in the show they had an interesting relationship. But off stage, well, first of all, Vivian Vance, a little bit about her, and then her relationship with William Frawley.
Yeah. She was a stage actress from New York. She had been in a couple of Broadway shows. At one point, she was the understudy to Ethel Merman in Anything Goes in 1930. She moved to Hollywood, was in a couple of movies, was quite a glamorous woman. The director of I Love Lucy saw her in a play and said, this is it. He went backstage and he signed her on the spot. Lucy wasn't even there because she was busy at home. And the chemistry between Lucy and Ethel was phenomenal. Now, the chemistry between Ethel and Frawley was also phenomenal, but in a different way. For one thing, he was 22 years older. And she said, he should be playing my father. And he said, she's one of the finest girls to come out of Kansas. But I frankly wish she'd go back there. So they did not get along on stage or off stage.
It sure worked on with the characters on stage, though, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
My guest today is Todd Hunt, a nostalgic humorist and I Love Lucy historian. And as they were about to begin filming season two, Lucy landed a bombshell that threatened the future of the show. And we'll talk about that after the break. This is Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. Back after this.
I love Lucy and she loves me. We're as happy as two can be. Sometimes we quarrel, but then how we love making up again. Lucy kisses like no one can. She's my missus and I'm her man. And life is heaven, you see.
This is Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. My guest today is historian and humorist Todd Hunt. And in the background, you just heard the I Love Lucy theme with words. And Desi sang it on just one episode, May 11th, 1953, to serenade Lucy Ricardo on her birthday. And if you're just joining us, we have been discussing the partnership of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz and the backstory of I Love Lucy. And you left kind of a tease before the break there. As Lucy and Desi were about to begin filming season two, well, Todd, what bombshell did Lucy land?
She discovered she was pregnant with Desi Jr. She didn't know who that was at the time. She had already given birth to little Lucy before I Love Lucy began in 1951. So she let the powers that be know, and the network had a fit. Well, what'll we do? We're going to have to cancel the show. It's over. Desi said, why is it over? We can't show a pregnant woman on TV.
Amazing.
And Desi and the writers, Bob Carroll, Madeline Pugh, and Jess Oppenheimer said, well, why not have Lucy Ricardo give birth on the TV show? We can't do that. That's never done before. Well, why not? Well, it's a natural thing. Well, they finally persuaded them to do it. They brought in a minister, a rabbi, and a priest to review all the scripts that had to do with pregnancy, just to make sure there was nothing that was offensive. And there was nothing. They approved everything. The only thing was they could not use the word pregnant on television. This is 1952, Jim. You can't say that.
My goodness.
So Lucy was having a blessed event, or she was expecting, or as Ricky said, specting. So they got some laughs out of that. They shot a number of the episodes in advance so that Lucy could have the baby. And she delivered the baby via cesarean section, and her doctor only did cesareans on Mondays, which is the day that Lucy was on. That was her, Monday night was Lucy. So coincidentally, they aired the show where Lucy gives birth the same day that the real Lucy gave birth.
Unbelievable.
They had no idea that the real baby would be a boy, but he was in the script. So even if she'd had a girl, it would have been a boy on TV. Fortunately, it was a boy, which led to a lot of confusion. People thought that little Ricky was the real
Desiree
Nash Jr.
Yeah, we all did. Yeah.
And I'll show you how popular Lucy was. That episode drew 15 million more viewers than Eisenhower's inauguration the next day. We like Ike, but we love Lucy.
You know, if you look back, we had the final episode of The Fugitive, final episode of MASH. We can go on with all the Who Shot JR, all these types of things, but nothing could equal with this. The whole world or country was ready for this. It was really a cultural phenomenon, that episode.
Yeah, front page news all over the world.
Right, right.
And the gifts, people sent gifts, truckloads and truckloads of stuffed animals and stuff that they donated to hospitals and stuff. People were just, because by then, Lucy and Ricky were so believable. People really felt that they were part of their family.
Right. And do you think that's why it was such a cultural phenomenon? Is that one of the reasons why it was just an incredible impact?
Yes. And it was funny. It was funny. And people still laugh today.
Is that the episode where Ricky's running around real nervous before he... I'm trying to remember that.
Yes. The episode is Mertz's and Ricardo's are rehearsing. What's going to happen
That's right.
when Lucy goes? So they go do a rehearsal. Lucy walks out and says, honey, it's time. And Ricky picks up the suitcase, and Ethel goes to the phone. She dials, she says, doctor, we're leaving now. They hang up. Da-da-da-da-da. Everything works perfectly. So then a little while later, it really happens. And she says, Ricky, it's time. It's time. It's time. It's time. It's time. And then everybody runs to the phone. Ethel says, that's my job. And then they all run to pick up the suitcase. They end up, the three of them, leave the apartment, leaving Lucy there, and Lucy says, hey, wait for me.
The choreography is so amazing. Yeah, thanks for reminiscing with that. That's just so neat. We're going to go back to Desi again a little bit, and we know how wonderful that that Lucy is, but we've described him as an incredible multitasker. But not just with the I Love Lucy show.
Mm-mm.
I mean... there was a studio that they made called Desi Lu.
Yes.
And I think we should talk a little bit about that.
As owners of the show, they created Desi Lu Productions. And after about the first season, they started renting out their studio to other shows to film there. And then they started producing other shows as Desi Lu, some of which are, I'll sing you the theme, see if you recognize them. Bum, 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 Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible.
Okay.
I was a little late.
Yeah. How about this one? Da 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 da. No, that was another one. This was Mannix.
Oh, man. I didn't know they did Mannix.
They did Mannix. And probably the most famous show after I Love Lucy that Desi Lu did was Star Trek.
And, very good impression, by the way.
And then there was tick, 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 60 Minutes. No, I'm just kidding. That was not a Desi Lu.
Well, they had all sorts of stuff. December Bride.
Yep.
Let's Make Room for Danny. Thomas Show.
Right. Our Miss Brooks.
Our Miss Brooks.
And Desi had...
The Real McCoys.
Yes. And Desi had a hand in all of those.
Right.
Getting the writers, getting the cast, getting the directors. That's why he was so busy during I Love Lucy.
Well, you know, he really wanted to get out of it. If you recall, they were getting so big with all these shows. He wound up buying a big studio, right?
Well, he said to Lucy, we're so big now, we have two choices. we can either get bigger than MGM, bigger than all these other studios, or we can just quit and retire, and we've got enough money.
But he said we could still work a little bit.
We could still work here and there. Yeah. You could do a special right. or here and Lucy said, I want to keep working. And so they got even bigger.
And really worked him into the ground.
It did. And that's what led to their divorce. Maybe we'll get to that
later. Yeah, it's just a shame. I mean, he was an amazing guy. But, I mean, you know what's interesting, though? The quality with those other shows was pretty darn good, even though he was still having to produce and take care of the I Love Lucy show. Again, such a multitasker. Meanwhile, a lot of pilots. It wasn't just those shows that, you know, that's the other thing. For every show that gets on the air, there might be 50 pilots mm-hmm. made, maybe more than that, 100 pilots. I mean,
yeah.
All these shows that didn't get on, and he was making one pilot after another because he had so many great ideas.
Yes, Carol Channing had a pilot for a show.
Right.
That didn't last.
Right.
Betty Davis had a pilot for a show.
But he wanted to do anthologies, too, yep. and things like that. I mean, dramatic shows. He did do the Whirlybirds. I remember that as a kid.
You know, you got me. I know the name.
Thing.
I remember that there was a helicopter. Yeah, I don't remember anything more about
and
it.
They were like would go in the mountains and save people. And all
okay.
that.
Okay.
But then he bought RKO, like you said, and mm-hmm. I guess at one time wasn't it one of the biggest with Desi in control.
Desi Lou was huge. It was big. And as you say, he just finally, after 6 years, I Love Lucy stopped doing the weekly series. And for 3 years, they did Lucy Desi Comedy Hours, which were one-hour specials every 4 weeks. Still with Lucy, Ethel, Fred, and Ricky, but with guest stars.
So how are those specials different then?
Well, for one thing, they were an hour instead of a half hour.
Okay.
In fact, the first one was a flashback about how Lucy and Desi met, and it ran an hour and 15 minutes.
Hmm.
And Desi said, we can't cut it. So the only time it's ever happened in history, the U.S. Steel Hour followed I Love Lucy, and Desi said to the producers, if I can get U.S. Steel to give us 15 minutes of their time, can we do our 1 hour and 15-minute show? And they said, yeah, if you can do it. And U.S. Steel was low in the ratings at that time, and Desi persuaded them to let us do the first 15 minutes of your time. It'll be a great lead into your show, and they said, fine.
It's interesting that they were able to get that done.
Yeah.
But again, it shows Desi's persuasive mm-hmm. powers. You know, he was a financial guy, too. He was a wizard with the numbers.
Yeah.
And he'd walk right into the CEOs of the biggest companies and say, look, here's what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. And he had that kind of Cuban witty way about him.
Yeah.
In fact, if you read his book, it's sometimes laugh out loud funny.
He
wrote it all, too.
Yes, and he was a real charmer.
Yes.
He'd put his arms around the head of Philip Morris and say, oh, amigo, come on, we can do this, can't we? And they say, oh, okay, Desi, yeah, you've seduced me.
It does help in your number one show, too.
Yes, it does.
A little bit about Lucy, then, and let's kind of go, I guess, where I'm getting to. Desi eventually does get out. Let's talk a little bit about
that. He gets out in 1962. Lucy bought out his share of Desilu.
Because he just wanted out.
He wanted out.
Yeah.
He wanted to retire, to be on his yacht, to raise his horses. So Lucy became the sole owner of Desilu, and she was the first woman to run a Hollywood studio.
Hmm.
All the while doing her own weekly series. Here's Lucy, The Lucy Show, and later Life with Lucy. She had a lot of help, but she was the ultimate one.
But she wasn't crunching numbers like Desi was.
No.
No, she had people to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was her baby. Yeah.
And you mentioned her writers were with her from day one.
We should take time to talk about them. I mean, they wrote almost every episode.
They did. For the first 4 years, Bob and Madeline and Jess Oppenheimer, who was also the producer, wrote all the episodes.
Were Bob and Madeline married?
They were, but not to each other.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Madeline was married. Bob Carroll was not. Madeline was actually married four times.
Oh, wow.
Including to Quinn Martin. Remember that name? A producer
Show.
So her.
They had that big iron thing.
Yes. A Quinn Martin production.
Yeah. The Fugitive.
Yes. Her official name was Madeline Pugh Davis Martin.
Okay. Wow. Well, so they wrote all these episodes, and They were like, what, how many episodes per year were they doing?
Well, it was a total, I Love Lucy was 180.
So now, writing all these episodes.
After four seasons, they did bring in two other writers, Bob Schiller and Bob Weisskopf, to help them. Mm-hmm. So the joke was, it was three Bobs and a Babe. And Madeline was Babe. They did, in the early part, they did recycle a lot of the My Favorite Husband plots and dialogue to TV. And when you watch Lucy with paying real attention, you can tell it's very joke-oriented. And you can tell where the genesis was radio. Yeah, they had the comedy and the slapstick, but that came in gradually.
Mm. Where did they get a lot of their ideas? I'm talking about the three main writers who started. Yeah.
They would get them from life. One day they happened to walk past a pizza parlor and they saw a guy throwing up dough and making the pies. And they thought, oh, Lucy could do that. They would always come up with an idea for Lucy to do something funny. And then they would back into it. Like, how does Lucy come to be tossing pizzas? Well, then she gets a job in a pizza parlor and she's tossing pizzas. And she tosses it up and at one point it goes up. But it doesn't come down. And she looks up like, where did it go? Where did it go? Lucy was a great actress who could play funny. Mm-hmm. You give her a funny script, she would rehearse it and rehearse it to its death to make it look spontaneous. And Ethel was the same way. Ethel came from theater background also and was really big into rehearsal. In fact, when they would do funny things like the grape stomping and so on, Madeline would act it out for Lucy and say, here's how it goes. Mm. And Lucy could look at it and study it. Lucy was not a funny person. You see her on talk shows later. She's very serious.
Yeah.
But she didn't think funny. But she knew funny when she saw it. And that's why she kept those writers off and on throughout the years because they knew her. And finally, the original writer said, well, we can't come up with any more Lucy stuff. We've done everything.
Imagine. You know, there's just so many episodes. You mentioned Vivian Vance. I want to give her just a little bit of credit because I'm thinking of the Chocolate Factory.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, Lucy was, you know, the conveyor belt starts rolling, and before you know it, there's all these chocolates. But if you watch Vivian Vance, she's pretty much duplicating what Lucy is doing.
Yeah, and just enough, but not to take away from Lucy.
Exactly.
And the camera is on Lucy most of the time, but a couple of times it goes to Ethel and she's doing her thing and they were just doing their thing together.
You know, I guess we should talk a little bit about the split. And people couldn't believe it when Lucy and Desi got a divorce. I mean, they're watching this TV show.
Yeah.
They just thought they had this idyllic life. And then they thought they had neighbors like Fred and Ethel. And everything was just wonderful. But they did obviously split up.
The marriage had been in trouble for quite a while, mostly because Desi was working all the time. And she would yell at him about that. And then he would yell at her for yelling at him. They both had fiery tempers. He would go off and spend time at their other house. But they stayed together for the good of the show because you can't let go of that golden egg. And finally, when the last episode was filmed in 1960, the last Lucy Desi comedy hour, next day Lucy filed for divorce.
Oh, my goodness.
And Desi came from a different culture. Desi loved Lucy, but he liked to comparison shop, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And he became alcoholic because he was working so hard. And she could not live with him anymore. They still loved each other, but they had to part ways.
My guest today is historian and humorist Todd Hunt. And after this quick break, we'll continue our discussion about I Love Lucy. This is Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. Back after this. Today is historian and humorist Todd Hunt, and my name is Jim Wunderlich. This is Word of Mouth. In the background, you hear the disco version of I Love Lucy. Can you believe that, Todd? And
yes.
That came out during the disco craze of the 1970s. Everybody loved Lucy.
Everybody loved. In fact, Ethel Merman even had a disco album, which is not to be confused with the Ethel Mertz disco album. No, I'm just kidding. Ethel Mertz did not have a disco. Fred Mertz, however, had a workout video.
Unbelievable.
Mertz till it hurts. No, I'm just making that up too.
Just real quick, we did talk about Lucy and how things went on. She wound up owning Desilu. You know, she, obviously they worked it out, she and Desi, after the divorce, and then she continued to stay on television. Other than Desi with his memoir, which was very a bestseller in 1976, which we've talked about, Call It a Book, how did his career evolve after that?
He retired, and after a few years of doing nothing, he got a little antsy, and he did come back a little bit doing some producing, some TV pilots that didn't make it, but one that did, a show called The Mothers-in-Law, that ran for two seasons, starring Kay Ballard and Eve Arden. Mm. And he was the executive producer of that. That was his main thing that he did after that. But then he just, as you said, he wrote his memoir, which I love the title. It is literally called A Book.
A Book. It is a book, yes. You know, how should we remember them, Lucy and Desi? What's your take on that?
I think we remember them certainly as pioneers, not only with the Lucy program, which was funny, but also what it gave the industry, the concept of reruns, the concept of shooting sitcoms with three cameras, which is still used today, mm-hmm. for most of the shows. They really stayed close, and in fact, Lucy said many times that they got along better after they were divorced. She remarried a comedian who had never seen I Love Lucy. He worked at night, so he had never seen the show. She met him at a party. His name was Gary Morton. Desi married his neighbor, Edith Hirsch. They got together the blended families for holidays, and they got along great. And to the end, Lucy would ask Desi for advice on all her different shows or producing things or questions about how do I handle this employee that's not doing it. She'd always call up Desi and say, what do you think? What do you think? Because she really respected his opinion.
You know, Todd, we just have a minute or two left, and just want to kind of talk a little bit about you. Now, you bring the stories of Lucy and Desi to life in your presentations. Real quick, tell us a little bit about the program, and where do you do these programs?
I do these programs all over the place, at libraries, park districts, senior communities. I talk about much of what we talked about today. I show clips of famous episodes, play a clip of My Favorite Husband, and just take people through the story of The Making of I Love Lucy, which is the name of the program.
Those are fun presentations. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you for being a fellow Desi aficionado.
And if you wish to contact Todd, visit his fascinating website, toddhuntspeaker.com. This is Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. Have a great day.